This is Fed Up, the podcast by Falcon Nutrition, and I'm your host, Jason Falcon. This podcast will feature coaches, current and former clients, industry colleagues and peers, as well as a handful of others that we feel will bring value to your life as you continue on your nutrition journey. Enjoy, thank you for listening, and let's have some fun.
Okay, welcome back. I hope everyone's been enjoying this three-part series so far. This is part three of three, so I know that it has gone a little bit longer than a normal episode in that we've split it up into three. First one being an intro, the second one being Samaj and I getting into this latest diet phase of his, and today is where we get through the middle and then where he goes from here. So thank you guys so much for bearing with us. Hopefully you're enjoying it and getting lots of wisdom and nuggets along the way. But just throwing a little intro in here because this is the first time we've had a multi-part episode. So feedback, always welcome. Enjoy what's about to come. And thank you so much.
It becomes a byproduct of the behavior versus us saying like, okay, well, the goal is to lose. I didn't make I lost 26 pounds. That wasn't the goal.
Yeah.
The goal was to complete a 12-week deficit.
Yeah.
It was to build behaviors. It was to become aware of the struggles that my clients deal with. Yeah. The byproduct of doing all of those things for that time frame was 26 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at 26 pounds.
Right.
Could it have been 30? Oh, why wasn't it 30? It's like, I think people like go through this process of like putting this number, this hard like destination on what winning looks like. And then they say, well, I failed. It's like, how could you sit down and say all of the work you did is just for nothing?
Yeah.
Whether or not you even lost a pound. That was one of the things that I really tried to push on myself, like going through this, because I also deal with the struggles of like, I'm not seeing the progress that I want to see here from the work that I did. Like maybe like I'm doing something wrong, but you did the work.
Right.
Whether you could do something better or not, give yourself the credit for doing the work.
Yeah.
And then make the adjustment outside of making the adjustment punishment.
Yeah.
Because that's what people often do. They say, well, I did the work. I didn't see the progress that I wanted to see. Let me cut more calories and
do more of the work or harder version of the work.
Let me go walk 20,000. Like, let me go walk 16,000 steps today. I'm only walking 8. I'm going to walk 16 tomorrow. I'm going to eat nothing but water and ice baths for the next six weeks. It's like that sounds like a hard time for you, and you're not going to get to a place where you can actually sustain that. Yeah. None of those behaviors are sustainable.
No.
Right. So, I mean, like over the time, like I said, I had these three phases. I had levers and I decided, hey, which one am I going to pull? And I like actually sat down and asked myself, which of these levers am I actually going to pull?
Because they all had their unique separate costs.
They had their costs. They had their trade-offs.
Yeah.
There was a time for them. In some cases, it didn't make sense. If I had an event coming up, I wasn't going to sit down. I knew I had two events in the first like two like rungs of this. I wasn't going to sit down and just pull calories all the way down.
Right.
Because like I'm trying to go to these events, hang out. But at the end of this diet, I knew that I needed to block off the time. There's no time for eating out. Drinking doesn't fit in.
Right.
You know, all of these other things, like I'm not going to fit in ice cream into that period of time just because I know that I'm trying to, like, I don't have the calories for that. And also to stay full. One of the problems as I like dove deeper into this, like a question I'd ask myself is like, again, what are the problems that we're solving for? And the big one that I think goes across the board is hunger, and no one really actually pays attention to it. Like it's a battle that you'll never win.
Right.
Don't show up to fight hunger thinking like I'm just going to white knuckle my way through it.
I heard that if you just drink water when you're really, really, really hungry, that if that doesn't work, then you're just weak. Is that
biology wins every single day, every single time. Yeah. You don't know what it's like, man. We are not even hungry in this country. Like no one gets that hungry. Right.
I used to go there a lot. It's been a while, but I used to pull that card and I used to say, how lucky are we that we can choose
to put ourselves into this foreign state of this feeling that we have not really ever. And that's something I think about a lot. Like, are we the concept of hunger on the whole? Like, you know, stop when you're 80%, slow down, don't load your fork before the bite in your mouth is done. Like, I think we spend so much time overly full that when we're satisfied in our minds, that's still feeling hunger. You know what I mean? And so just like work on distinguishing what that even means, right? Like, and I could, like, I'd throw myself in there. It's been a while since I've been hungry. That one day where my food quality choices, and that was like Monday got away. It was not an ideal day one. I finished everywhere I needed to, but I paid the price of a few harebrained decisions. Hunger is an interesting thing. It's probably the number one derailer of anyone trying to make any changes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's the thing that you're fighting for the entire diet is trying to not be hungry.
Yeah.
If you can avoid hunger for a certain amount of time, you'll actually win. Cravings are caused by you being hungry for too long.
Right.
Eat enough food. And that's like one of the reasons why I actually really like the deload week.
Yeah.
Isn't because I'm going to tell you now you can have a piece of cake. That's not what it's for.
Yeah.
I want you to eat so much food that you're like, this is too much food.
Right.
I
Look
want
at
you
last
to
week, eat 25% more of all of that.
And eat them from decent choices. I want you to eat rice cakes. A rice cake is about 10 grams of carbs. Let's just say you have 50 grams of carbs in a meal for that week. I want you to eat 5 rice cakes with your meal. It's a decent amount of rice cakes. I don't know if you've ever eaten a rice cake if you're here. It's a lot of, I ate 800 carbs yesterday and like maybe 400 of them were rice cakes.
That's a few packages. That's a lot. Yeah.
I have a lot of packages.
You get that 3 rice cake money? Okay.
It's a lot of rice cakes. So it's not about like, oh yeah, my calories are up, so I can now add an olive oil to my salad. It's like, that's fine. Like, I guess if you want to really enjoy a salad, sure. Yeah. But my goal isn't that you're like maximizing taste of food. Which I think is another conversation to have. It's meant for maintenance. Maximize taste in your maintenance block.
Yeah.
What I want to do is minimize hunger, fatigue, stress, all those things that hunger also causes during that period, which means I need to maximize your food volume and minimize anything that's going to cause you any kind of discomfort in your stomach. So like when people are sitting down again, like going back to watermelon, and they're like, Saman, do you want me to eat like a whole watermelon in this meal? Like, yes.
Yeah. Eat with the peel. Show me you're serious.
Dude, like don't even peel it. Just bite into it whole. Bite into it whole. But yeah, I want you to actually eat the whole thing. Yeah. I want you to eat 10 oranges. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I want you to realize that oranges didn't make you fat.
Yeah.
I want you to realize that none of these things that you think are an issue for you, this food, like, oh, this is so much food, I eat too much. It's like, no, you're not eating too much. You're actually just making some choices that are really misaligned with a lot of other things that are happening for you. You're hungry, your problem's hunger, and you chose a candy bar. And it doesn't solve your problem.
Yeah.
And you're now still hungry, but you have 300 calories in you.
I think what happens with fruits and veggies and why so many never get the chance to see the value or feel the value in them, I don't know if it's a product of our upbringing and just totally depends on if actually nourishing our bodies was prioritized or if we had, you know, fresh produce around or if it's a convenience thing, because the point at which you're proactively choosing more fruits and more veggies, it means you're preparing some things yourself. Right. And so I don't know if it's a time constraint thing, but like, it's much easier to just grab a candy bar than it is grab things out of the produce, you know, drawer in your fridge and start to slice them up, clean them. Fruits and veggies.
There was something you said earlier on hungerfulness, I think, is an important thing to think about. But even that, I feel like we sometimes go down this very deep rabbit hole on for a lot of people where I don't know if it always applies in a meaningful way to them. In fitness, folks started moving in a direction of, instead of me cueing you in order to do an exercise, let me give you the right exercise. and let me allow your body to somewhat self-organize under that exercise, right? If I choose the right exercise for you, your body's going to now have a position that it's regularly going to be in, that's strong, that's stable, that's using the proper muscles. I think food is similar. Instead of me telling you, hey, I want you to eat to 80% full, hey, I want you to eat strawberries, watermelon, and oranges. And I want you to eat until you're done. I don't care if you're 9%, like you're at 90%, 100% full. You're probably going to be underneath your calorie count.
Yeah.
And so like you easily start to get, how do you know what 80% full is if you never go to 100? And if you only ever go to 100 with ice cream bars, it's a challenge to go to 80% with fruit. So like, I like actually putting people in this position where it's like, let me give you the foods that you're probably going to naturally eat to 80% full anyway.
Yeah.
Something like fruit has a decent amount of fiber. It has a lot of water. It's going to fill you up sooner than, I mean, Cheez-Its aren't going to do it. Don't eat Cheez-Its until you're 80% full.
Yeah.
That's a dumb idea if you're looking to actually improve your body composition.
I mean, take 500 calories worth of Cheez-Its on a plate and take 500 calories of watermelon. Like the food volume discrepancy would be, you would want to stop eating, you know, before the entirety of that portion of watermelon were
correct.
Were consumed. Yeah.
And I think that's a behavior. Stopping. Mm-hmm. All right. There's a point to what you said before where it's like, well, we're so busy so that we don't think about eating, but oftentimes like we'll eat something that's really delicious and we're not hungry anymore, but we actually just enjoy the taste of it being delicious. Like we're just like, let's just keep eating it, even though we're full, even though it's uncomfortable, even though I actually just want to throw up. Like I'm just gonna, oh, the feeling went away. Let me see if I can put a little bit more in my face. And like people might be listening to this. And if you're not hungry, you're like, oh, that's weird. And then like, let's think about what Thanksgiving ends up being. Like you've been tasting things since you got to the house.
Yeah.
You made a plate and then you made three more following. You weren't hungry at any point in this process. But you're like, oh, well, everything tastes and smells so good. And also I'm in this environment where everyone else is also doing this thing.
Yeah.
All right. So I think like there's more to it, way more to it than just simply I'm going to be in a deficit. I'm going to like we've probably gone real far in that direction where all you need is a calorie deficit. Heck no, you need more than a calorie deficit to actually lose weight. Yeah. Yes, biologically, on that side of things, you only need a calorie deficit in order to lose weight. Yep. If you'd like weight loss to be sustainable, you're not going to do it on Oreos and cupcakes.
Yep. So three Pop-Tart packages and six Fairlifes a day. Stick to that for a year and you'll change your life. Like who could do that?
You don't want to do that. Like, no. I mean, there's someone might, you know, like it's a sad life, but like you're going to need more than simply just saying, well, how many grams of protein, carbs, and fats do I need to eat?
Yeah.
It's like, well, what's your life look like? What are the things that you want to do? What's important to you? Is date night important to you? Okay, great. Let's make sure that date night's integrated into your overall plan. Like, do you have time to actually commit to a deficit? Don't try to commit to a restrictive approach during the holidays. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. So that was actually one of my questions. I probably should have asked that earlier. Within like the calendar year, did you have a plan to where, okay, I'm going to diet down now so that I can, well, you said you're going to maintenance next, right?
Yeah.
Like through the holidays, typically this is the time of year, like the bro mentality is get nice and lean for the warmer months and then bulk through winter because we're wearing the layers anyway. Mm-hmm. But you're going to try to, or you're going to maintain versus, you know, massing back up.
Yeah. I actually thought about it because I think I'm in a really good position to put on size.
Yeah.
Like I think
you look fantastic, dude. Like from what I've seen, like
I will like this probably next week. I'm practicing this peak. It ends today and tomorrow is like supposedly when I'll be in my best shape.
Yeah.
So, and it's going well so far. So I'm happy with it, but, I'm the kind of person who generally overindulges because I love food. I love trying new things and putting new flavors together. And because I grew up like not somewhat like out of shape, like chubby and like not very active, yeah. I right now understand myself and I'm like, well, I should probably be a little bit more careful during these times where I may end up overindulging. So when I have masked in the holiday time in the past, it would turn into a little bit of a dirty bulk.
You gave yourself permission. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have this holiday and holiday turns into a Halloween week. And you know, like we're just, okay, now we're going to go over here and try this out because this pop-up is happening. And I'm just going to like, we're just going to count these calories as 2000 over here at this restaurant.
That's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm just going to do that. And I'm like hungrier now because I didn't necessarily choose the right food choices and I need to eat more. So yeah, it would turn into somewhat of like a, I did put on muscle, but I also just put on more fat than I was, I wanted.
Like
to.
A true dirty bulk for sure.
Yeah. So this go around, I'm actually looking to maintain through the holidays, enjoy the holiday.
Yeah.
Like, which again, maintenance isn't necessarily like I'm sitting down and I'm not eating out, but 90% of my meals will probably still be the same kind of stuff that I ate throughout my diet, just with more carbs.
Yeah.
Probably like white rice, lean meats. I'm going to try some different recipes that I haven't been trying. Like I have this chicken tikka masala recipe that I really like. And I'm not the type of person who's like, let me just like put some Larry's on some chicken and call it a day. Like I'll do that for a couple meals in the week just to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And just have like the way that I prep is I have a bunch of lean protein and I'll either make rice at the beginning of the week or I have packets of microwave rice that I have and some frozen veggies. That's an easy thing that I could say I'm busy. Let me just whip that together and move on. But I really enjoy like I make a pad krapow on a regular basis, which is an Asian, it's a Thai ground meat dish with a bunch of like basil and other things in it. If you're looking to change up your ground beef game because you've tired of like tacos.
I am actually, dude, like ground beef, rice, Maggi. I could eat that literally every meal of every day until the end of time.
Pad krapow is literally one of the easiest things to make. Okay. You just actually like put in the parts of it. And if you're trying to make it fast, like easy recipe to follow, it's whatever ground meat you want. You need some Thai basils to throw in at the end.
It's, oh, dude, that looks good.
It's so good.
Fried egg on top. Yeah, that looks nice.
It's peppers. So like Thai chili peppers, some other like Fresno pepper, whatever pepper you want, garlic and onions. Put that in a blender. And then all you need is some soy sauce and maybe some hoisin sauce.
Dude, and that probably tastes infinitely better. Like I'm looking at this one. I thought it was chickpeas. It's not. It's tofu.
It's so good.
You can do so many different things with that. And it's so good.
The first time you make it, you're like, oh, putting all this stuff together. The second time, you're like, oh, yeah, just throw it in the pot. And it's done. Just like how you make chili. Like you don't even follow a recipe for chili anymore. You're just oh, yeah, I need some cumin. I need some chili powder. Like, yeah, and you just do it up.
You can look at it and tell when it's right.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'll be putting together some like trying out some different recipes, like doing stuff like that, but sticking to, you know, again, like just some basics. I'll be eating a lot of fruit and I'll be eating a lot of potatoes. I'm actually trying to stay as full as possible during this maintenance and keep my step count pretty high just to see how far I can actually push calories up without my weight trending up.
Potatoes are where it's at, man.
Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. That's the plan right now. And then we'll see what January brings.
So as far as home food environment, married, you have a wife, no kids. Mm-hmm. I don't believe.
No
kids. When through the last 14 weeks or looking forward, were you preparing food? What is your wife's name? I'm sorry.
Kayla.
Were you preparing food for you and Kayla? Were you preparing her something and then yourself something? What did that look like?
So we've actually had this conversation with people on a few different bases. And I talked to clients about it who have spouses. When we traveled, we moved away from this idea that we needed to eat the same thing. Because when you go out to a restaurant, you don't order the same food, right? Like you wouldn't be like, okay, that's what we're having.
Yeah.
Like you order whatever you want. So we almost treat our kitchen like a restaurant.
That's cool.
Where when we're making foods, we oftentimes won't necessarily need to make like something that we're going to split. So if she wants steak and I want fish, like there's two pots. that go on the pan. One has steak and one has fish. Yeah. And like, well, both have rice and some veggie. And that's kind of how we go about that. And I know that that doesn't work for everyone. But because of also how we meal prep, like we don't necessarily prep out an individual meal. We just have some meat on hand, whether that's like that's pulled chicken or like, it's not like the bodybuilder-esque meat prep either. Like we'll buy Costco chicken thighs and we'll jerk half of it and curry the other half. Mm. And so like, I'm not mad at it. No. I go in my fridge and I have jerk chicken and curry chicken in my fridge that I can put on rice or add potatoes to or whatever I want. Yeah. And I'm still compliant with my particular goals. Does it take a little bit more practice if you've never done something like that before? Sure. But for me, it's secondhand today. Like it's the same kind of meal prep that anyone else would do.
How much would you say outside of like you, like your affinity for cooking and your desire to like cook recipes, if you could just like look at everything you do from a pure, I'm setting myself up to succeed for the next few days. So call mm-hmm. it prep, call it whatever you will. How much time would you say it takes to prepare as good as, you know, half a batch of jerk chicken, half a batch of curry chicken? Like how much time would you say you devote to actually cooking and setting yourself up?
I don't devote, I guess. And I maybe I'm just unaware of what other people do to feed themselves. But because I take so much, if I'm going to cook a meal I really enjoy, let's see a meal that I like really like. I'm like, yeah, we're definitely going to do that. I mean, I like a lot of things. I made chiliquiles from scratch. Like, I love chiliquiles. Okay. So like, let's say I'm making a steak and potatoes, super simple, right?
Yeah.
How long is it going to take you to make steak and potatoes? You take the steak out, you put some seasoning on it. You may let it sit for, let's say like 15 minutes. If you're like, you know, horrible, like 30 minutes, if you're real, you let it sit for a little bit. You're going to put it in the pan. It's going to take you maybe 10 minutes, like all in all for things to heat up, steak to cook, 3 minutes on each side, 6 minutes on each side, 12 minutes, I guess, if you're like, you know, a barbarian, you put it to the side, like it's going to take about 30 minutes.
Dean would be that guy. Yeah.
So let's say 30 minutes to like done cooking your steak, your potatoes are also done, you're there. Yeah. It's like 40 minutes ish with like prep and all that stuff. That's probably the same amount of time I'm going to use to cook anything else. Like it may take an hour to cook the chicken, but in terms of like pulling it out of the package, 10 minutes, like, you know, trimming it up a little bit, seasoning it, 5.
Yeah.
Putting it in the oven and then letting it cook and then letting it come out and cool. Like it's we're not talking about anything super crazy here.
So I'm not like hours and hours.
I'm making baked. So jerk chicken is baked. Like it's baked chicken essentially. I can throw it on a grill and you can do more with it, but I'm keeping it simple because that's my life.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, how can I do the same kind of thing with these foods that I would probably do with something else? If I'm making curry chicken, it takes probably about the same time, 40 minutes, cut it up, throw the seasonings on it, saute it in the pan and add a little bit of broth and let it cook down. I couldn't take it, like make it take longer. Like good curry chicken is like bone in chicken. You've let it like marinate like overnight. You're sauteing up a bunch of things. You're adding potatoes to it. You're making more of a stew. It might take you an hour, but it's still pretty fast. Yeah. I also just grew up in a house where the idea of fast was an hour.
And then the Instant Pot happened. Yeah.
Well, so like we were doing things like that. I mean, I think some people make a sandwich in like 30 minutes. It's like, why did it take so long?
Yeah.
But as you get better in the kitchen,
right,
you can do a lot. You can do a whole lot in an hour.
Yeah, you get more efficient.
You're not sitting down also staring at something. You're like, is it roasting? Is it roasting? Like it's in the oven for 30 minutes. Like set a timer and walk away. Go do something else. Go
turn that light bulb off. You don't go look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can walk out of your house with your oven on. I promise. You're totally fine. Like there's probably some days to answer your question. There's some days where it's very fast and there's very little dedication to like how much time it takes. And it's really just a matter of opening my fridge and putting something on a pan for 10 minutes. And there's some days where I may take a little bit extra time just because I want to take that little bit of extra time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What put a different spin on it. Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that is I think a lot of people avoid cooking more, preparing more, prepping more, any of those, just because they think it has to take forever. And I tell people all the time, like, you don't have to make your entire week's worth of food. You will throw half of it out if you do that. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the thing that you have the toughest time taking in naturally, whether at home or in the wild? Probably protein. That's why I still, all these years later, prioritize prepping protein. So crock pot, instant pot, your stove, your oven. There's a million different ways you can do it. It does not need to take you longer than, I mean, how long does it take to unpackage chicken, throw it in a crock pot with walk away. You can leave your crock pot on overnight. You can leave your crock pot, you know.
Well, even to that, I think one of the questions that I ask clients during their check-ins is, what does their next week look like? Because I don't want you to plan something for a busy week that doesn't fit a busy week. Like, I'm going to prep on Wednesday. So you just told me that you're in an in-service all day Wednesday and you have a date night. Like, when are you going to prep on Wednesday?
Right.
You just said this week is going to be a week from hell. Why do you think that you're going to be able to do all this other stuff? Like, you're going to work out four times. You're going to prep your meals every day. You're going to like, you're not going to do that. Let's figure out how we actually make this happen. So I've been telling a lot of people, like, listen, the prepared food section is amazing.
Yeah.
Even like when I'm talking about a Sunday, like, Sundays are a busy day around this house. And so when we're at, we'll go to Costco, and I'm going to grab something from the prepared food section. And this is not your hungry man meals. This is like, you got short rib, you got lean cuts of sirloin, sous vide already cooked.
Oh yeah.
You can add whatever you want to it.
So we have Sam's, not Costco, or like, we have a Costco.
We have Sam's too. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sam's Club has upped their game big time. I mean, they have all of those. And people go, wow, it's a little expensive. It's like, bro, go anywhere and spend less than $60, like, eating out. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, the steak and potatoes that you probably make, which is probably better than most places, you're probably into that for what, like $8 to $10 total, if that, depending on the, you know,
it's based maybe on 12. Steak. I like a New York strip. So
okay, so like, you can round up a little bit, but like, go find a good steak and potatoes meal anywhere out for under probably what, $30 at this point.
$30 is probably the bottom, yeah.
And it's probably gonna not be cooked how you like it. It's gonna be that chef following, or you know, the whoever. There's so much value, time, money. You getting it how you actually want it when we prepare more at home.
One of the things I've also just realized is that, like, if I skimp on the food items that I'm going to purchase, if I try to just save as much money as possible on meal prep, I won't eat it.
Yeah.
I won't like it. Like, don't go meal prep, be like, I'm going to buy 20 pounds of chicken breast.
Yeah.
Because, and if you don't like, do you eat chicken breast?
Yeah.
Do you like shrimp? Okay. I love shrimp. Awesome. Then go buy shrimp.
Yeah.
I'm not saying buy 20 pounds of shrimp, because maybe that's going to like put a hinder on the wallet, but at least, like, you know, have it a few times in the week.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if buy chicken thighs, oh, but chicken thighs are fatty. I really don't care.
Yeah.
Because you're probably going to eat chicken thighs more than you're going to eat chicken breast. And I'd rather you just have a little extra fat in your day than you sit down and throw away half your pulled chicken breast that you put in the fridge.
Yeah.
Choose the things that you actually enjoy. So like, when people are like, you know, I love the idea of eat foods that you like, but also, like, notice that some of the foods that you like probably aren't great for your goal.
Right.
And there are probably other foods that you like and you enjoy, but you don't actually eat that often.
Yep.
Because you think that they're bad. I don't know. Like, I can make room for ice cream, but I can't make room for fatty fish and chicken breasts and chicken thighs. Like, it's a weird concept when people kind of go that route. It's like, oh, I thought that chicken wings were bad for you. It's like, you eat gummy worms. Like, why are you worrying about chicken wings?
Wings. The 8 beers from last Saturday were calorically, and, you know, just how they had you feeling. That was a little bit like, should have just gone for the ice cream.
It's like, there's better. There's good, better, best.
We can
move from good to better, maybe, before we try to like jump to best. When it comes to like food with my wife, we generally eat very different things in the day. Like, we don't have the same cadence. We eat together. I think like that's our thing.
But
what we eat, well, we also just like preparing food. So we'll sit in the kitchen and we'll both cook, and we'll like, you know, oh, I'm going to add some of this, or I'm going to add this, or I'm just going to have something different. When we do make meals together, it's really just a matter of, I think you have that time. You're not going to make great meals together trying to also diet aggressively. I think like that's something that doesn't get talked about because relationships don't really get brought into the health side of things.
Yeah.
The time to figure out what, how this works and how this dynamic works with eating is in maintenance. When you can actually like prioritize the deliciousness of your food preferences and all of those things. So that when you go into a deficit, yeah, do I want chicken tikka masala one night? Absolutely. I switched out the heavy cream for some coconut milk or some half and half or some skim or whatever it might be. But yeah. I didn't say, oh, I can't eat any of those foods now because I've never actually paid attention to what actually goes in them. And I've just kind of eaten willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Right. Like we can make some really good things together. We still have tacos, but maybe I'm eating some like light carb or carb counter tortillas, and she's having homemade ones because she makes homemade tortillas.
I love the idea of I think anyone remotely new to whether it's whatever you want to call it, dieting, tracking, whatever approach you're going to take, whatever you want to call it, spending time just doing it, like walk before you run, like learn the skill, learn about yourself. It's the discovery. It's like the self-awareness.
Yeah,
that is invaluable. And if you really have no time to do that and you think it's a game of discipline and willpower, like it's usually not. It's usually self-awareness. And if you've never given yourself the chance to learn about yourself, like, you know, historically, holidays, massing turns into a dirty bulk. You can use that self-awareness now to where you're not having to white knuckle it with discipline that really none of us have. You can just probably set yourself up a little bit better in certain situations to not go that route because now you know that.
It's also like redefining what you think you need discipline for, right? Like, I think a lot of folks think like, I need discipline to track. It's like, I mean, you only use discipline to track, but why not just track for the sake of tracking? You know, we've talked about maintenance for a little bit, but I think maintenance is a very valuable place. I think maintenance is very important. I think maintenance is where you start tracking. Don't start tracking in a deficit. Knowing that tracking is the stressful thing that you're going to do, along with being in fewer calories, along with trying to balance a relationship. It's like,
and they're both new, right? Like you've never tracked.
They're both new. Exactly.
Not felt hungry since you knew or since and you now, can remember. Yeah.
And now tracking is related with fat loss. It's like, well, it's not. It's tracking is just knowing.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about losing fat. Don't tie the goal of fat loss to tracking your calories.
Yeah.
Track them just so that you understand what your body consumes on a regular basis. And once you actually fully understand that, it makes it 12 times easier to actually make adjustments.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, I know that I eat this many carbs, proteins, and fats in all of these foods that I enjoy. Before I say, like, I'm going to demonize all of these foods that I enjoy, maybe I just realize, and I think a lot of people get to this place, they're just like, oh, I eat like triple the amount of fat I probably should. Like, can I just figure out why? Like, can I manage that a little bit and not even like try to lose weight?
Yeah.
Let me just add a loaf of bread instead.
Yeah.
Because I can, because I have the calories for it. Let me like see if I can move some things around here so that I'm not like hangry in the afternoon.
Right.
Because someone told me that bread was bad.
Yeah.
And I'm eating like butter instead. It's like, well, no, I don't need the butter. Let me just have the loaf.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Hey, it looks like I can fit a Snickers in here if I really want it, I guess. Like, that's fine. And it kind of fits the bill for, I have some gap in time here where I just need something because I'm bored. Which, I mean, we talked about, you know, emotional eating and eating because you're bored. I don't think it's always necessarily a bad thing. It's a bad thing when we make a habit out of it.
Right.
I think if you're eating because you're bored and you're overeating, I think you're bored too often.
Mm.
Maybe don't solve the eating when you're bored problem. Maybe solve the bored problem.
Yeah.
Because if you only bored once a day, then you don't eat when you're bored anymore. How about that? How about that? But yeah, I mean, tangents, fun time.
It's all right. Where'd we get? Okay. So we kind of went through, stepping back, Samaj chose to diversify his efforts. He wasn't going to a diet with less calories as his only lever. He had a few different things he could have done. He leveraged, you know, like less food and more movement were pretty much equals, and they were widgets that at any given time he could emphasize more. a lot of people are coming to the around to the idea of it doesn't only have to be about food levels, which is fantastic. Because there's probably some weeks where if less calories was your only choice, it would have started to get hard. But because you were able to the seasonality of it, your schedule, life lent itself sometimes to just moving more. So by the end of it, you said 26, what was the 173 at the lowest? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then you brought us through peak week, which is really just running an experiment on yourself. Are you, out of sheer curiosity, what are you, pictures, weight, strength, like numbers? Are you doing like one rep? Like, what are you gauging anything by, or truly just the feel of it all?
It's gauging. It's all aesthetic.
Okay.
For this particular peak week.
So like a true peak week. Got it.
Yeah. Like a bodybuilding peak week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just testing it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just talking to some friends and.
Yeah. Lane had a really, really good, like, not a quick guide, but it was almost, and it was like the cliff.
There's a really good research study by Scott Stevenson, that maps out an approach. And okay. Essentially, like, I don't think it was a meta, but it's a pretty like thorough study.
Okay.
On the entire process. So I ended up just kind of mapping that out and listened to Lane's talk, I think, on it too. Listened to a couple of different people's talks on it.
Cool.
And just kind of came up with a structure that I was like, all right, I'm just going to commit to this and just see what happens.
That's awesome, dude. I'm looking forward to seeing whatever the end result is.
I'm feeling good right now. Things are moving in a really, really interesting direction that I've never experienced this before. So I like it.
That's awesome, dude. Well, so next is sort of like, you've sort of told, is that what you're getting, seeing if a stage of some sort might be? No.
No.
The next steps. No.
Probably not, to be very honest. I think for me, I think it helps. And I've heard this analogy before. The reason why your car goes 120 miles an hour isn't so that you can drive it at 120. It's so that 60 works better.
Mm.
And when you have more range in something, I think you're better able to handle or manipulate some of the finer points. There's like more meticulous movement that you can make. You can become more intentional. And I think when it comes to working with people, because of the level of range and zooming in that I've been able to do in certain areas, I can better zoom in and zoom out.
Yeah.
Like it's
I love that.
That,
man.
That's where I'm at currently. So like, hey, yes, I've gotten this lean and I understand where you probably need to stop.
Yeah.
Because I've taken myself beyond that point.
Right.
And it's not like I have never gone there and I'm like, well, no one should ever go there. It's like, no, I've gone there and I've gone there in a way that I didn't feel like overwhelmed by the experience. I didn't necessarily have this baggage of I need to get lean and I need to win this thing. Yeah. It was just an experiment of, well, how far will my body let me go?
Yep.
If I commit to this process without the extra baggage and stress that generally comes along with it.
Yeah.
And I found a place where it was like, well, at this point, I'm going to have to make some trade-offs. Like, here are the trade, like, here are the things that, okay, cool. Week, month one, these are the kind of trade-offs that I need to make. Month two, okay, these are the trade-offs that I need to make. 3 months in, there are some different trade-offs that I need to make. When a client now comes to me and I'm like, well, what's your level of commitment? Not like what you think your level of commitment is. It's like, how much time are you willing to do to this? Like, what level of trade-off are you willing to do? This is a different conversation with someone with three kids and a night job versus a single person with no kids. Like, okay, great. We can approach this very differently, very differently. So, I mean, just as an example, I'm working with a mom right now who I'm trying to pull. She's a mom of three. I'm trying to pull as few levers as needed to get her to where she needs to go.
Yeah.
We've pulled one, and the only one we've pulled is an organizational lever. So like, even we're talking about like move more or eat less. I think that those are two. Yeah. I think that there are more, like in terms of just like bringing yourself up to a place of consistency in how you eat.
Yeah.
Like if you eat the same time every day, it actually makes for a better hunger signaling.
Yep.
Right. If you eat at noon, eat at lunch at noon every day, you breakfast at 9, you eat dinner at 7, you're probably going to have a similar hunger signaling throughout those days. So we've only pulled the one organizational lever for her and then just said, hey, let's just kind of like talk about a step goal and like, let's see where you are and let's just set you slightly above that. Yeah. She hit her goal weight and she's like, well, what happens now? I'm like, well, if you have capacity, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Versus get 10,000 steps a day. Yeah. Here's your lean protein list, your carb list, your fat list. Eat these many calories, these many macros, you know, and work out 4 times a week. And she's going and checking and checking, and she's stressed, and she's dropping the ball because she's stressed, and her kids are angry because she's stressed, and she's eating their snacks because she's stressed, and her relationship is suffering in some aspect, even if it's just a little bit, but it's causing additional stress. And she's now making these choices that don't actually align with her goals and don't fit. And she knows that at the end of this, she's done.
Yeah.
She's just going
to
bury herself.
Yeah, there's a shelf life to it. And then I can go back to how it used to be. Yeah.
Right. And so like with her, she's like, I haven't had to do anything and I've hit my goal. But I wouldn't have known that necessarily. And I would have just thought, and granted, like there's some aspects of it that I know, but I think I can see that more clearly as a how little some people need to do in order to hit their goal because of how far I've gone. And I think like that's something that probably resonates with you. Someone who says, I'm trying to lose 20 pounds. You're like, well, I've lost 100. I can help you lose 20.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot, there's definitely a lot that we can go into that, but it's been great to be able to almost simplify that approach for people and let them know like, hey, you need to work hard at this, but not in the way that you think you need to work hard at it.
Yeah.
Like we're not talking about suffering here. Right. We're talking about change. And I really would like to change that narrative that change needs to be suffering.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be challenging, but not all things that are challenging are about suffering.
Yeah. Like different, right? Just different things, which different on surface things. Level may cause a little bit of uneasiness, but they're not bad. Like,
yeah,
pain is weakness leaving the body. Okay. Well, that's great. Keep it on your t-shirt. It doesn't really apply. Like it doesn't have to suck.
Sure.
And I think, I would agree with that. We can change the messaging a bit. And like Samaj doing this to kind of like revisit, like for me, most of my weight was lost between 2013 and 2015. Mm-hmm. And then there's just been, you know, mostly maintenance, but a couple mass phases, a couple diet phases. But it's been a while since my last like dedicated diet phase to where now, just because we did a thing 5 or 10 years ago, like on paper, we can see this is what I weighed and this is what I weighed. And there was my picture and here's my picture. But there's like a feel and a human living in the real world element to it that I think is very, very important and probably like needed for those of us that other people trust to help them through things. It's like, okay, you did it 10 years ago. That's great. But like things are different now. Like you didn't have kids. I have kids. That's like the coolest reason possible. So
I think a lot of folks in our industry really pride themselves on this idea of like they can suffer more. Like
I wrestled, I get it. Like, yeah.
Like I can push through it. And we make all of the same mistakes that our clients make.
Yeah.
Where after the diet, we go and we eat 3 double cheeseburgers and we eat a whole pizza. The only difference is we are able to go back into that mind of like, well, I can stop and I can continue to suffer. Yeah. And our client had never built that muscle.
Right.
They don't have the capacity to go back to this way of thinking and approaching their food because they've built these systems that just spiral them in that direction. These are habits that will never go away and inclinations that'll never go away.
Yeah.
Right. For them. We can only make the better ones or the good, the more productive ones bigger and more influential. One of the biggest changes I've seen with this approach that I took, I'm not saying that my approach is better than anyone's. It's based on principles. Like it's nothing crazy by any means. It's not magic, but this approach has led me in a position where I'm like, I don't have any cravings. I don't care to, at the end of this, I'm not trying to go like have a blowout and eat a bunch of stuff. I'm actually looking for, I have a box of potatoes in the fridge that I'm like, I'm looking forward to having some potatoes and some steak. That would be great. I'm looking forward to having just like some higher calorie meals, but I love fruit. I think like that's awesome because I had fruit in my mass. I had fruit in my maintenance.
Yeah.
I had fruit in my deficit. And at some point fruit went away toward the end of my deficit. There's nothing wrong with fruit, but like it just, I needed more volumes for foods. It's not this like, well, I only eat these things when I'm dieting and then I go back to all of this other stuff. There's nothing for me to go back to. And I think building that base needs to happen a whole lot faster than we're currently doing it.
Yeah.
Like we're taking our time and saying, well, over the next year, we'll start to incorporate more vegetables and change your, it's like, that should be the priority. That should be the thing you do in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
How do we get people to actually enjoy, figure out how you enjoy foods that align with your health and with your goals? And as we said earlier on, that's not alcohol. I don't care what you want to say. Like it's not living a little isn't the way in most cases in the way that we put it today.
Or it is until it's not. And that's where most people, you know.
Yeah. It's like it's have a donut. I don't care. That's totally fine. But the goal shouldn't be being able to fit in all of these things into your day. That shouldn't be the goal.
Yeah.
The goal should be living in a way that you enjoy and aligns with you and your values and what's important to you and that makes you happy. The food, put it on top of it. By all means, you want to go out to dinner, have a great dinner out. Went out yesterday. We had a whole day out with my rice cakes in hand because I needed to eat more.
There you go.
But we have a quarterly day where we just go out and we plan for the next quarter. Me and my wife, we plan for the next quarter and we go to a couple different restaurants. We went to a really great restaurant for dinner last night. We were at a coffee shop during the day. I had some beignets for lunch. Ooh. And nice. You know, like it was good. It was a really good time, but then I'm back into my regular
day. That wasn't most of your time. That wasn't most of your days. And you did things a certain way. Most of the time you didn't have to, there was no stress involved, I bet, with those beignets.
But I also didn't hype it up in my mind as a goal either. Yeah. It wasn't like, for 14 weeks, I'm really looking forward to this next cheat meal. Really, because we can build that up in our minds is like I'm only doing this for this thing.
It applies to abs too, right?
Right. Yeah. Anything you put it there, this is what I'm doing it for. And as you said, like when you hit that goal, you realize how like anticlimactic it really is.
Do you know Josh Citron?
The name rings a bell, but no.
He was a very good friend from the Stronger You days. And he was, man. I wish you were still actively coaching. I learned a lot from him. He was full of sage advice and wisdom, but something he would say often is empty goals create empty outcomes. And that sounds mean because like, who are we to tell someone they have an empty goal?
Mm-hmm.
But more so like an example would be like, if I can just make it through this, then I can have that quarterly cheat day. Or if I can just get abs, then I know all these opportunities will open for me. And you kind of get to have a little bit more substance. What I work on with my people a lot is making sure that the goals we set are actually tied to our values so that we start to find some meaningful goals that actually feel as fulfilling as we thought they would. Mm-hmm. If we set our goals correctly, it's amazing how much differently everything can feel. It seems like people start to get into that place of making conscious decisions. Like, you know what? I chose to go out to dinner with my wife and I knew going in that I was going to be over and that's what I prioritized in that moment. So I'm not beating myself up and I go,
as long as you choose it, that's please, where we just want choose you. It.
Yeah.
You know, oh man, I ate a bunch of gummies or I ate a bunch of donuts. It's like, were they good?
Yeah.
Did you choose it or did someone just throw them in the office and they were stale? Like that's not, there's a choice there that, and one said, I prioritized delicious donuts and the other one said, I didn't really give two shits.
And that's what we were saying the other day. Yeah. Like get the thing that you can only get at that one place or that only when you go back home, can you get that, you know, your aunt makes this one thing, your grandma makes this one thing. Or like, if you're going to a place known for something, go get it. Don't go to New York City and get a piece of Sbarro pizza. Like go to the best place, get the freaking deep dish, like get the thing. And then most of the time, come back to baseline and do the right things. you know?
So, something I use with my clients, and I use this with myself, and I'm bougie when it comes to food. So it's like higher ranking for me. Usually it's like, is it a 7 out of 10?
Cause it's tied to your values. Like is something you value.
Right. Is it a 7 out of 10? If it's 7 out of 10, I might consider it. And for me in this diet, it got to the end. I was like, if it's a 9 out of 10, yeah, it's probably
so the standards
happening.
Rose. Yeah. Okay.
But there's like, there's very few places when I really consider it that are like, oh, that's a 9 out of 10 and also fits in my budget right now.
Yeah.
Like it's just not, it's not happening on a regular, not here at least. So for some people they're like, well, yeah, it was a 7 out of 10. It's like, it's been a 7 out of 10 every week. I feel like that can't be the case. Like it, like just maybe your food choices suck. We need to improve your food choices. Something you said earlier that I'd love to comment on is just the, like something that I try to get people to realize is how they get there is going to dictate what there feels like. So again, like based on some of the stuff we've said, if you're white knuckling your way through to get to the goal, if you think like you're struggling and it's torture and like that's what's going to get you to the goal, I don't fully think that you're gonna enjoy getting there. Not when it comes to health, not when it comes to fitness. Yeah. There's a level of that. I think that there's a level of challenge of getting there, but the athletes that are on top actually really love playing the sport. They don't white knuckle their way through every training session.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, I love the sound of plates clanking on each other. Yeah. I love the feeling of muscles being torn apart in the gym. There's something that's distorted about the way that we go about that. That isn't like, this is normal. Like we're, it's somewhat abnormal as to our obsession with this thing that we're doing. And I think like in some level, there needs to be a level of like appreciation and obsession with food, but not, people call themselves foodies all the time. And I'm like, you're not really a foodie. You just like things that are deep fried and covered in sauce. Like when you're a foodie, you only need salt and pepper to season a steak.
Yeah.
And that's a good, you look for the cut. You're like, ooh, that ribeye is going to sear beautifully.
All I can picture is the bear as you're saying all this. Like I keep coming back to Carmi. Yeah.
Like a good butter.
Yeah.
Some salt, some pepper, some thyme, garlic.
So where does A1 rank in there? You forgot to say A1, I think.
Ketchup? Just put ketchup on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but so not until I started really, really, really getting into like cooking and baking. You realize like how so much of that stuff, like A1 or just anything you would add, you don't need a lot.
No.
Like if you prepare things well,
You
don't really want anything that's going to detract or overpower the thing that you just prepared. Like some of the
correct
like the complement.
A good cake is not overly sweet.
No.
You can unbalance a cake by adding too much sugar.
Dude, if I walked into a bakery right now, like give me a really, really one of those like special croissants over an over the top sweet, really anything, even the cinnamon roll I mentioned the other day. There's a special place in heaven reserved for like a warm, fresh croissant with a little bit of butter on there and then a nice coffee. I don't need the, you know, some of these cakes are just like so overdone. I don't know. Yeah. That's okay. There's my tangent.
Yeah.
I guess I want a croissant, Samash.
Dude, I hear you. I hear you. But yeah, it's how you get there. I think like ideally, and one of the things that I was really happy about with the outcome here was how I got to the end.
Yeah, dude.
I wasn't sitting down like, oh man, I can't wait to go have a piece of cake, or I can't wait to go to this place so I can devour all of this. There's all you can eat sushi place down the street. And prior to competitions, that was always it. Prior to like, you know, a weight cut, I was like, oh, I just can't wait to dive into that. And I try not to even encourage those conversations with people anymore.
Yeah.
Like it's not about changing things necessarily forever, because I don't think that you're going to eat the diet foods that you have used to blunt hunger forever.
Yeah.
I think you're going to start to work in other kinds of foods, but it shouldn't be this like mad dash to the end either.
Yeah.
Because then you easily just kind of create another issue of, well, now I'm over consuming these things that I've restricted. We were talking about this conversation of a society that's just being overly restrictive, but I think the restriction happens here before it ever actually happens on their plate.
Yeah.
Like you tell them again, hey, I want you to eat more fruit. And they say, well, what you're saying is I can't eat more candy. It's like, well, I didn't say anything about your consumption of anything else.
Yeah.
I just actually want you to eat more of these things. And if it means that you choose less of those other things, that's totally fine. And I'd prefer that it's a choice for you and not a restriction that I impose.
Yeah.
Because when you like going back to watermelon, if you eat a whole watermelon, you probably don't want candy afterwards. It's a lot of watermelon. It's sweet. Good watermelon. But yeah, I think how you go about getting there will absolutely dictate what that experience is like afterwards. I think abs can be beautiful. I think you can have a great time with abs. If you get there in a meaningful way and your body is like set up genetically to like be able to hold that level of body fat.
Yeah.
But if you've cut out every meaningful thing from your life.
Dude, the roofer with abs probably feels 100 times better and happier than the person that absolutely, I mean, you know where I'm going. I don't even need to say
it. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's like if you can set your life up to support abdominal muscles showing, yes, I want more people to do that.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to do. But if you just want abs for the sake of abs,
yeah,
it might be really challenging for you to get there because it sounds like you also want a tequila sunrise for the sake of a tequila sunrise.
Well, and the damaging part that we see the aftermath of is years later, the person that put themselves through that miserable process one time, it's 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this picture of myself. Can you help me get back there?
Yeah.
That picture doesn't represent the 6 months of not good times that went into getting it. And we start to lose sight of those feelings. Like we forget about that because we just remember the picture and the visual that it represented. So to your point on how one gets there, I think is pretty much everything. I've run a lot of races in some really, really cool spots, up and over mountains and all through different areas of the country. And at the end of all of my ultra marathon running, I said, I'd really like to get into hiking.
Mm-hmm.
I ran right through those places and I didn't see it. Effing thing, you know, because you're watching your foot placement. You're watching the person in front of you. You're looking at your watch. Like, I wish I would have slowed down. I would love to go to all those same locations and just take in the sights a little bit more.
And maybe that's actually a really great kind of like how it sums it all up. I think a lot of people are rushing through this diet process.
Yeah, man.
And they're viewing it as like just a means to an end.
Yep.
And there's maybe somewhere where you stop along the way and you just hang out.
Yeah.
Like, can we make it short? Can we make it 6 weeks? Yeah. But maybe you should actually just get comfortable.
Yeah.
Not get comfortable being uncomfortable. Actually just get comfortable. Get comfortable being at this new place. Because, hey, for some folks out there, this is not a deficit that you're looking at. This is your maintenance. You just aren't used to it yet. Like, that's probably something. Like, my maintenance calories at the beginning of this were probably 3,000. My maintenance calories now are probably closer to 25.
Yeah.
That's an awakening. Like, you're not losing weight to be able to eat more at the end of the day. Like you actually have to learn how to live in this new body that you're creating. So I get the people who are like, you know, these changes need to be permanent changes, but the changes aren't necessarily in the like, just in the calories and the food choices. The changes are in how you approach food general. The approach for food, I think, is more important. If you if you look at everything as like, oh man, I can't ever have this again. It's like, well, you're setting yourself up for that lower weight person to just be miserable.
Yeah.
Because you've already imposed particular restrictions on them.
Yeah.
Even this idea of, oh, you can't, if you're making permanent changes, it means you can't eat the way that you've eaten in the past. It's like, well, you can't approach food the way that you've approached food in the past as this unlimited source. You have to approach it with a little more finesse, with a bit more intention, with a whole lot more structure than you probably have in the past. But that applies to anything. That applies to your finances. It applies to your relationships.
We actually did not talk about it at all before we hopped on. But when I mentioned my change with drinking and drinking a whole lot less. And you said you too. Did you have you heard of or did you read This Naked Mind?
Nope.
It's really, really good. And it's written for those that are the author was an alcoholic, and she's basically sharing her journey and encouraging you. She's basically citing science throughout the whole thing. And right up front, she tells you, I don't want you to stop drinking because you bought this book. I want you to give yourself time, change like literally nothing. Just start making your way through this book. And there's something she says, and I'm going to butcher it. She basically says that like when you initially set out to make changes, before you've done absolutely anything, there is this dread and this fear. And it's like you're having a funeral for your past self because all you think about is all of the things that you can no longer do. I can't go to that baseball game because I know I'm going to want to drink. I can't go out with XYZ friends because all they do. And like, you're not really looking at all the good you're doing or like the new things that you're opening up the possibility of. You're just looking at, here's all the things that I can no longer have. Mm-hmm. And I think that for most people is what they associate with dieting, that dread. Yeah, that
absolutely.
That, like, why does everyone want to start on a Monday when today's Thursday? So they can just, all right, it's the Last Supper for the next 3 days. All the things I'm going to absolutely not have for the next. It's like, it doesn't have to be like that though.
I think I love that. I love that idea. I love the idea of not changing when you start changing. And I think people tend to like put the cart before the horse in that way where they don't even know what they need to change yet, but they're trying to change stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what's the most meaningful thing to change?
You maybe tell me, coach.
Like, it's like, let's like actually pay attention. Let's take a look at what's going on. What am I doing? What choices am I actually making? All right. And do I actually want to make those choices? Because for a lot of people, they realize I didn't actually want that. Okay, then have what you want. Man, that's a empowering position to be in.
Yeah.
Maybe you actually wanted a salad. But because I told you that you can only have salads on Monday, now you think that you can't have anything else. And so I've removed your ability to choose.
Yeah.
And I've only created a restrictive environment for this. But on your own, maybe you would have chosen a salad.
Yeah.
Cool. Something that I really try to make sure that I help clients understand is, and I said this earlier on, but the problem that they're solving and the choices that they're going to make, because that's all that they have. That's that they can only make choices. They like you can outsource that decision-making process to something else outside of you, or you can decide it on your own.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, they just make the inappropriate choice for the problem. Are you hungry? Then choose something that's going to solve hunger.
Yep.
Do you want gummy bears? Great. Have gummy bears, but also choose something that's going to solve hunger. Because if you have the gummy bears and use those to solve your hunger, you're probably going to fail at solving your hunger and also anything else that you're pursuing dietary wise.
Yeah.
Like that, and that makes sense to them. It's like, oh, right. Yeah. That, okay. I get it. I get it now. So I can have what I want.
Possibly work, can it? Like that, like make it more restrictive and hard, coach.
Make it harder. I want to make it harder. Like I want to sprint. It's like, nah, zone two.
Yeah. And I really like, we can say this now. And I realize that to like those listening that are like, are they mocking? Like, no, but we see how it goes. Like we see, and we've also been there. I think that's the important part. Like we've been the sprinters. It takes doing certain things. It's just like parenting, man. If you guys decide to have kids, parents aren't jerks, but we've come before you. We've learned the painful lessons.
Yeah.
And my God, do I love my son and my daughter? And my God, do I not love to see them in pain? Mm-hmm. So sometimes they perceive me as being like mean or bossy, but like, Gunner, I know how this ends, man. You don't need to walk on the curb on the side of the road. Walk on the sidewalk. You're going to tumble off the curb and you're going to bonk your head. Like, just don't do it. We as coaches, like, I know we can get to where we're going, but if you try to do it this quickly, we're going to hit a wall. I've been the guy hitting the wall. Like, this is what I would recommend. Let's talk about this slightly slower approach. So we don't think you're not capable, but like, we probably just don't need to go that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there's so many ways to break it down. That's not just food.
Yeah.
It's not that simple. It's not that simple of a conversation.
And
that's where I probably align with, like, I find myself in both camps of ideas where it's like, well, we're talking about emotions and we're talking about feelings, but we're also talking about food and calories and macros. We're talking about both. I think that that encompasses the entire conversation really well. And for a lot of folks, I mean, like I said, on the problem side of things, they're trying to solve something, but they just end up distracting themselves from the actual problem. That's their solution to the problem. And the problem never fully gets solved. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, how are you distracting yourself? Scrolling on the internet, snacking on things, burying your emotions,
buying another book about the thing that I'm trying to address. Yeah.
You know, like, not hiring the coach that's actually going to challenge you and hiring the one that's just going to give you a meal plan.
Yeah.
No offense to anyone that gives out meal plans, but like, I don't think that it helps the person.
No.
I think that you have to show someone how they're going to navigate every, give you, if someone gives you a meal plan, you're going to do great. Right.
Mm.
If someone gives you
for a certain amount of time. Yeah.
Well, no, you have the tools to say, hey, this is not.
Oh yeah.
This is
in
not
a vacuum. Yes.
Yeah. You, I'm talking about you personally, Jason, someone gives you, Jason, a meal plan. You're going to do great.
Yep.
You know how to use that for yourself.
Yeah.
Right. You know that it doesn't mean that I should follow this to the T.
Right.
You know that it's not written in stone. And in fact, it's in pencil. Give someone else a meal plan without any guidance, without any structure, without the background, without the knowledge. And like, it can be a, such a damaging tool for that person. It can be absolutely restrictive. So I understand.
Yeah. Well, they're also looking at that and they're not seeing anything on there. They have things in their head that are their favorites that are not on there. So they're seeing the subtraction that took place and not the actual sense-making additions. And that, I think, is the entire thing you're getting at.
And I think that's where the coaching happens.
Yeah.
The coaching happens in teaching people how to think through how they're making their decisions and how they're making their choices. Because I can make all the choices for you, but I don't think that that's coaching.
That's giving marching orders, right? And that's, that's what's difficult to instill or just even try to like convey to people. Like, you, what you do not need is a piece of paper with do this, don't do this.
Yeah.
If you want to be like a really good order taker, I can't think of any coaches that coach that way, but they're probably out there. But I would rather like help you learn to think certain ways that are in line with the outcomes you desire.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I want you to make choices for yourself.
Yeah.
And not just like look at what the right answer is.
Right.
Because like, well, maybe that's not the right answer for you right now. You know, I talked about me and my wife eat different meals. For some families, like, you need to eat the same one.
Yeah.
That's just probably the right answer for you at this moment in time. How do you do that, but also stay on track with your goals?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. For some people, the trade-off isn't worth it.
Right.
Of trying to manage their calories as much as is necessary to lose the last 15 pounds, whatever the last 15 pounds is. I don't know. Like, after 15, you're just like, cool, I'm perfect. But like, you know, you're going to have times in your life where life is busy and hectic. And nutrition needs to take a back burner. Nutrition needs to take a back seat. It's not going to be in the front line.
Yep.
Ideally, you've built the skills necessary so that it taking a back seat doesn't mean that it's completely off the stove. Doesn't mean that you're just like, you know, throwing everything to the on the wall and seeing what sticks, you know?
To me, that's when someone changes forever, is when they realize that like fitness, health, it's not a singular pursuit and it's not a box that you can check. Like, you have not reached, like, you're very, very lean now. Like, are you in the best shape of your life right now?
Yes.
Okay. Is that pursuit done? Like, okay, now I can just literally, like, you couldn't because it's things you value, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it is an ongoing pursuit. And I tell people, in the grand scheme of things, hopefully you have like health or fitness, relationships, you know, if you have a faith of some sort, spiritual, like, hopefully you have a list of things that you hold near and dear to yourself. And any given week, call it six things. Like, they're probably numbered 1 through 6. The idea is to not let that health and fitness widget fall off of that list. Like, it might be six some weeks. You're going on vacation. Enjoy yourself, man. You work so freaking hard. I've seen it. whether it's number one or number six, this snapshot in time, when you need to prioritize, it's like specificity in sport, right? If you're training mm-hmm. for a strongman show and you see the list of movements, you're probably mm-hmm. going to spend more time drilling those down. If you Correct. Are in debt, you're probably going to live a certain way to get out of debt. If you're overweight, you know, health fitness are probably going to bump up, teeter between number ones and three instead of three through six. So it's just keeping the right things, I think, on that list and acknowledging you can't just be pursuing the exact same thing as number one forever. Mm-hmm. That would probably be a whole different episode. But the people that do that tend to, when life throws us a curveball like COVID or like an injury, we wish that our identity wasn't wrapped up in this one single thing and that we had even diversified those things more.
We then tend to resent that one thing.
Oof.
Right? It's uh-huh. like, well, oh, because I focused on this, then all of the other stuff went to crap. And so the only way for me to ever get anywhere with this is to focus on it and allow everything else to go to crap.
Yeah.
So then I would just won't focus on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen people resent relationships for that.
Yeah.
Because they've like deprioritized so many other things in their life in order to prioritize yeah. this one thing.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. I think that, like you said, it happens with health and fitness way too often.
Yeah.
Where folks think that like progress, just like what's necessary for progress is just a too high bar. I try to let people, my clients know constantly, progress, get to the gym 3 times a week. Progress, get some step counts that's above 7,500. Progress, eat 3 to 4 structured meals a day. Don't care if they're out. Eat 3 to 4. You're probably going to be able to make progress in that realm. Maintenance is even lower. Maintaining is a great place to be. Twice a week in the gym. You're still eating your 3 to 4 structured meals in the day.
Yep.
And you're probably getting somewhere between like 6,000 and 8,000 steps.
Yep.
You can maintain. Totally fine. Why do we want to set the bar so high for some people? For some, right? And it puts them in this position of, oh, again, going to your streaks. Oh, I missed a day. Oh, I failed. It's like you didn't fail. You just didn't necessarily move the needle as far forward today, but you still moved it.
And your law of averages has been working out pretty dang good. So, like,
so when I look back over 14 weeks, I lost 1.8 pounds. Per week.
Yeah. And I remember there were stretches, man. I remember there were a couple stretches where you were doing all of the things.
All of it.
Just like every one of our diet phases has it, you're either the same or oftentimes heavier.
Yep.
And like if you chose that singular day's result as a, should I keep going? Like, is this worth it?
Yep.
You would have bailed probably more times because I'm guessing you had more days if you looked at, you know, your singular weight trend. Like most people, you probably had more days where you were up than down. But on the down ones, it was by a larger interval, right? And that's what brought
right.
the And that's a hell of a 14 weeks. What'd you say, 26?
26.
Yeah, that's a with two of those weeks at maintenance.
Two of those weeks at maintenance. I gained 9 pounds in my maintenance weeks.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's...
Every maintenance week.
That's fantastic. The approach, the outcome, the how you felt during, how you feel now through peak week. You know where you're going. I think you did it for the best reasons. I think I kind of asked and brought us through everything that I wanted to. Any other like takeaways or anything? Did you surprise yourself at all along the way? Like any like, oh dang, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I mean, so I expected that I would get to the end of the 14 weeks and I would be ravenous. That I would need. I actually planned initially, I believe, in going into a mass because I usually need food, like I need a lot. My maintenances are usually a time where I get really hungry. And it's a weird phenomenon, I think. But I think I've also like seen it where I just choose different foods.
Yeah.
And those foods are usually lower volume. It's like, oh, my calories went up, so I can eat more rice.
Yeah.
My calories went up, so I can have like more bars or I can have more like sauce on things. Yeah. And those things just are lower volume than what I've been eating. So I tend to get pretty hungry during that time. So, I mean, this has probably been the first time where I've gotten to the end and I'm like, I could keep going if I wanted to. I don't care to, doesn't align with my goals at all. So I'm going to stop here and I'm going to readjust for a future date, like what I'd like to do. And I think like one of the realizations I've had for folks coming into this is like, you should probably stop before you get to the end.
Dude, that is a huge part of, that's something I like to think I've gotten much better at within my coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is hugely, like, we are the professional, subject matter expert sounds so corny. I don't know that we're that, but like, sure, we should be able to anticipate things based on everything we've just talked about. And in that same parenting, you know, take this advice. I think let people know ahead of it. Here's how it usually goes, where we're going to pull up about 5 to 10% before we get there. There's no reason to hit that area.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even practice, you know, I think your approach where you're cycling in maintenance weeks is absolutely perfect. Guess what? At the end of this, as soon as we up your food, you're going to weigh more. Have you gained fat? No, but you're eating more. So you're going to hold more water and you're going to see along the way. So by the time they get there, logic and rationale, what's the word? Because emotion's still going to hit no matter how many times you've seen it. But it's almost like, not like cognitive behavior, but like you've been exposed to this. You've seen it before. This isn't your first time.
But like my reasons for, and I gave this a couple times in talks, but my reasons for ending a diet aren't, oh, I hit my goal weight.
Yeah.
Because I honestly don't think that there is a goal weight. I guess like you can say like, you know, there's this weight that I'm looking to get to.
Yeah.
But unless, to be very honest, like unless you're a bodybuilder and you've gone down to like single digit body fat on a regular basis and you just know like this is 5-7%,
yeah,
and you're looking to get back to that same weight to see like, or you wouldn't be 5-7% and like get back to the same weight. So you got to 10% at that weight, you get back to that same weight, and your goal is to be like 8-7%. You get back to that same weight, your goal is to be 6-5%. We're talking about the course of a year.
Yeah.
Like this is not even a short period of time. Like you've gone through mass phases and things like that. I understand that as a goal weight, but I think for a lot of people, goal weight in their minds are more of a, what kind of person were they?
Yeah.
Who they like, what they were doing, how they felt inside their body. So I'd rather you build habits over the course of time and then allow weight to be a byproduct of that. So I mean, over that time, I was looking at things like, how food obsessed was I? Was I feeling cravings? And if cravings had got to a 9 out of 10, I probably would have stopped there.
Yeah.
And I would not agree. To say like, I'm going to go like have a cheat meal now. It's like, no, food needs to go up because that's not something that I want to keep moving forward with.
Yeah.
So I kept a clearer idea of like what some like internal cues were telling me that whole time. And I think it's something that I'm definitely bringing into the coaching side of things.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, self-awareness is really, you have a lot of it. I mean, I keep nodding saying, yeah. Like I've been learning a crap load from you over our last two talks, like things that you focus on. And I think are probably really good at, that come far before other things. It's not macros. It's not calories. It's not, you know, like I put a post up, your credit score is a reflection of your habits, your behaviors, your choices, your actions, your weight. Pretty much the same, your waist size. Like it's not good or bad, it just sort of is. And it's at this moment in time, all of those, your credit score can go up or down, your weight can go up or down, your pant size can go up or down, but like focus on the behaviors that lead to the thing. Don't just try to like fixate on the thing and shortcut your way and sprint there. Like do the work that's consistent with producing the outcome you desire.
I'll even take that up a notch. And I'd say focus on the behaviors that support you being happy. You have to define a lot of things there, right? Yeah. Because I'm if I pull one case scenario specifically, I have there's a woman that I worked with I did a challenge, a free challenge. Older woman.
Yep.
Has struggled with weight for a good chunk of her life. Was nervous about like what I was going to tell her she could no longer eat. She changed nothing about food choices. She organized her day of eating. and started putting activities as anchoring behaviors in her day around those times where she ate.
Yep.
And she's lost a pound every week since.
Mm.
And it's like, when we spoke, she was like, the best part of this is that I'm able to eat all of the things that I enjoy eating.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing the result of eating all of the things that I enjoy eating.
Yeah.
Like, can we put people in a position where they're both in the pursuit of happiness and their goal and not misaligning the two things?
Yeah. Like, they don't need to.
Happiness is not your goal.
Yeah.
Happiness is not your goal. Like, you don't have to change what happiness is for it to be your goal. How do we actually like make those choices?
Yeah.
How do we start to move in that direction for folks? Because for some of them, it's that simple. Yeah. 10 pounds does not need you to meticulously track your macros. It doesn't.
Right.
It's actually probably pretty easy for someone who's 30 pounds overweight. You can lose 10 pounds without ever tracking a macro. Tracking a macro is
especially if you give yourself time. Like, everyone could probably do that. Maybe not in 3 weeks or 3 months, but like, no, you could probably.
You could do it in a year very easily without doing a whole lot of anything different. To be very honest, just very few things. I think you actually made the post. It was like step counts. Like, if you get your step count here, like in a year, you would have lost like 10 pounds in a year. If you got your step count to just a reasonable place,
but nothing else. Typically we say that's way too long. And so we don't do the thing, and we either keep doing the things that are bringing us further from where that was going to bring us, or we just enlist the help of even more things that are definitely not productive. That's why when I just hired Eric and he said, what is your goal? I said, next October, I would like to be in the best shape of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I can roll with that. And I've had a few, maybe we are doing some good, man. Maybe people are hearing what we're saying. Cause I've had a few people recently that came on board and they said, I'm not really concerned. You know, it's not really a weight or like a body fat or even like a clothes size, but like, I want to feel like I'm being intentional and I'm just taking care of the one body I have. And I go,
right.
Yes. Like, there we go. All right. I've taken us on lots of tangents. This was freaking fantastic, dude. I've taken like a lot of your time this week, man. Samaj, again, if you want to run through where do people find you? Everyone, please follow him. My God. I mean, I've been doing this for like a decade and I like to think I know a lot of things, but there's nothing new. There's nothing new.
Mm.
Fitness, nutrition, it's sort of like the delivery of the thing and how you can take the thing and actually make it mean something to your life. I think Samaj has a very, very good way of, I think pretty much anyone could read anything he posts, watch any of his videos, and it's very actionable. So go follow Samaj. Samaj, where do they find you?
Posting Facebook and Instagram is where I'm at mostly. By all means, like, you have a question, shoot me a message, DM me. I'm here for it. Looking for coaching inquiries. I take on one-on-one clients there as well. So shoot me a message and we can talk about what looks like a really good fit for you. And then I also have a website that I'm currently working on and building up. It's samajhunter.com. So super simple. On Instagram, it's Samaj Hunter Fitness. And on Facebook, it's just my name, Samaj Hunter.
All right, so that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to Fed Up from Falcon Nutrition. We hope you learned a thing or two, or at worst, had a little fun with us. Please make sure you subscribe to stay up to date with our most recent episodes, and make sure you hit us up if we can answer any questions for you. Talk to you next time.